You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, Cam Newton says he's playing better because of one very simple reason. Glad you're with us today. Dan Orlovsky's right there. You see Mina Kimes and Marcus Spears on your screen now. Adam Schefter here as well. And a developing story right now that we want to get to with the Steelers. That's where we begin. Ben Roethlisberger, one of four Steelers who have been added to the reserve COVID-19 list after being identified as high-risk contacts after tight end Vance McDonald tested positive for the virus on Monday. Adam, what more can you tell us?
Well, Laura, this is a situation that more and more teams are facing on a weekly basis. We saw the New England Patriots go through this earlier in the year with Cam Newton and Stephon Gilmore. We saw the Lions go through it last week with Matthew Stafford. And now the Pittsburgh Steelers are dealing with it with Ben Roethlisberger, who was a close contact to tight end Vance McDonald. They flew home together. They were around the sideline together. And so now Ben Roethlisberger has not tested positive, but he must isolate for 5 days, and if he passes all his tests, he would be eligible to play this weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals. But we don't know exactly how this virus spreads. There are people in the NFL that are married that have slept in the same bed as their spouse and not gotten the virus. There are people who have been in close proximity that have gotten the virus. Nobody knows exactly how Ben Roethlisberger's tests are going to be coming out here in the coming days. But if it's all negatives, he'll be good to go in time for Sunday's game. If he does test positive from being around Vance McDonald or whatever other reason it is, then he would be out this week and presumably the next week as well. So the Steelers will continue testing him. They'll continue to see what turns up. And obviously they've added players to the reserve COVID-19 list today. And the concern in Pittsburgh is not all that different from the concern that every team in the league is now facing.
Yeah, we just saw this last week with Matthew Stafford. He ends up getting to play in the game. Adam Schefter with us all show long. Mina, what was your initial reaction to hearing this news about Ben Roethlisberger today?
Well, first reaction is, of course, that I hope he is fine and doesn't have coronavirus. Second is one that I thought about the Steelers before the season, Laura, which is, why didn't they upgrade at backup quarterback? You've got a 38-year-old quarterback in Roethlisberger coming off of a very serious injury. And so what I'm speaking of goes beyond COVID, he got hurt last week, both of his knees. And you've got a defense that's so good, all you need is average quarterback play to sustain this team in their quest for the playoffs. But we saw last year what they got without Ben out of Mason Rudolph, and it was not average quarterback play. In fact, it was far below average. He finished last in the NFL in QBR, below Mitchell Trubisky and below Kyle Allen, 4.5 completed yards per attempt. That's not good enough. I don't care how good your defense is. You can't do that on offense. And I was surprised they didn't go out and sign someone. And I was also surprised it was something they didn't consider ahead of the trade deadline.
I mean, I'm alone with that narrative. I understand exactly what you're saying, and it's 100% right. But more so, I thought about, like, this obviously happened with Matt Stafford, but now we're hearing about Ben Roethlisberger, is how are these teams preparing the guys that back them up? Mm-hmm. Like, the unconventional year that it is, are you getting these second-string quarterbacks, third-string even, ready to play? We had a lot of questions come up before the offseason, before the season started, of people questioning, like, how would teams manage losing a starting quarterback? What if this was the week of the Super Bowl? What if this was the week of an important playoff game? Like, this is an undefeated team. But these were all questions that we started to address. So hopefully, to your point, Mina, Ben is okay and he doesn't test positive for coronavirus and he can come and continue to play. But if not, I would hope that all teams in the league are preparing their second string guys like their starters. It's an unconventional year. When I played in the league, you only let your second guys get a few reps during the week. It should be more now for everybody.
Yeah, Dan, if Ben doesn't play, what do you think the game plan is for the Steelers on Sunday? How could they win this game against the Bengals?
Well, first of all, they would see a good amount of man coverage. That's what Cincinnati wants to do. So I would actually come out and major in my empty package because it's easier for quarterbacks to see the field. So I would empty out my backfield and go, okay, Mason, we're going to cut the field in half. I would throw the ball a bunch on first down and just get this to like a point guard game, right? Juju one-on-one, Ebron one-on-one, James Washington on one-on-one, Claypool one-on-one. I would simplify his mind as much as possible. I would not play a drop-back game because he came in a little bit the other week, last week, right? And when he's playing drop-back and it's, you know, your traditional, like, I don't want that play right there where I'm asking him to think a ton and, like, scan the field, 1, 2, 3 to 4. I want to cut the field in half. I don't want my back in protection. I'd prefer hops, and so as little thinking as I could give Mason Rudolph, the better. I throw the ball on first down. I'd empty out the backfield. I try to find the best matchups against man coverage and tell him if it's not there, the ball goes out of bounds. I don't need you to try and win this game. Just don't lose it.
And Dan, I don't want to say I've been critical of Ben Roethlisberger, but, you know, I have pointed out at times he's not really throwing the ball downfield. His receivers do a lot of work for him, but that clip right there and, you know, that one drive we saw out of Rudolph really revealed why Ben Roethlisberger is so important to this offense, because maybe he's not airing it out downfield. But his brain, his decision-making, changing plays at the line, calling protections, and his ball placement in the short and intermediate areas is obviously, it's more than a cut above. It's a million cuts above, and they are going to feel it if he is not in the lineup on Sunday.
Marcus, do you think the Steelers beat the Bengals without Big Ben?
No, I don't. Listen, Joe Burrow and Cincinnati, they're playing good. Like, last week they get a W. They are playing well. And look, we've lauded about Joe Burrow and talked about Cincinnati and the things they need to get fixed, but that's a scary team now. Like, he has legit, Joe Burrow I'm speaking of, he's legit raised the level of play for the Cincinnati Bengals. And now you're starting to see A.J. Green get involved, and Boyd has been involved. Like, this won't be a cakewalk, and I don't think they win it against Cincinnati if Ben is not playing.
Yeah, Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges combined for a total QBR of 32 last season. For Big Ben, he's doubled that mark with his performance this season, a QBR of 65.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's some Monday Night Football for you. The Vikings and Bears squaring off in our Week 10 matchup. Khalil Mack and that Chicago D trying to slow down Minnesota's Dalvin Cook. He's got 6 touchdowns in his last 2 games. It's 8 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Coverage begins with Monday Night Countdown at 6. Adam Schefter back with us here, and the NFL owners actually met today. Not too long ago, they wrapped up those meetings discussing a couple of topics. What was on the table today?
Laura, a couple of issues that got approved. Essentially, a short time ago, the NFL owners approved a new playoff plan if necessary, if more games have to be canceled in the second half of the season. We're coming up to a time here where some teams are done with their buys, and the league doesn't have the scheduling flexibility that it did have in, say, September. And so under the new plan, there will be 8 teams in each conference that go to the playoffs. 2 more teams were added. 16 teams will go to the playoffs if games had to be canceled and they had to change up the format. That's one bit of news from the owners' virtual call today. The other is that the owners approved a plan that any team that develops minority coaching candidates or a minority general manager candidate and has that candidate hired by another team will be awarded with back-to-back compensatory third-round draft picks. So if you develop a player like Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City, and Eric Bieniemy goes on to land a head coaching job, the Chiefs then would receive third-round picks in 2021 and 2022.
It's really interesting. Thanks for that report. And you heard Adam Schefter referring to that potential playoff plan if they need it. So heading into Week 10, let's talk about a few fringe playoff teams that can make a push with Mina Kimes. We begin, Mina, with who you're watching in the NFC.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Arizona's even a fringe team because they beat Seattle, who's in the lead in the division, thanks largely to the play of Kyler Murray. I had a couple questions about him, Laura. Intermediate passing game, can he improve, and can they develop a secondary option to DeAndre Hopkins? You saw Christian Kirk, some of these highlights, absolutely ball out against Miami. And over the last month, Kyler has been third in the NFL in passer rating on 5 to 15-yard passes. He has been amazing. On the other side, the Colts are coming off a loss, but they're still such a balanced, formidable opponent. Yes, at times the offense is a little stilted and Phillip Rivers turns the ball over, but how about that defense, which ranks in the top five in just about every category? Want to say a name we don't say nearly enough. Darius Leonard, one of the best defensive players in the NFL, one of the probably three best linebackers in football. Dude is just a playmaker every game, and he can single-handedly take over games.
So watch the Cardinals and the Colts, according to Mina, and there you see it, the AFC playoff picture, the Steelers, Chiefs, Bills, and Titans, your division leaders. Remember, three wild-card spots per conference this postseason. Ravens, Raiders, and Dolphins currently in position there. You got the Colts and the Browns on the outside looking in. And Dan, you just heard Mina talking about the Colts. The Raiders right there in the mix for a wild-card spot. They got the same record at 5-3 as those Colts. What are your feelings about the Raiders this year?
I don't think we're talking about them enough. I don't think we're talking about their quarterback enough. This is a team that their defense is okay, but they got a really solid offensive line. They can run the football. They use formations as good as anybody, but it's really how good they are on third down. Top five teams in the NFL on third downs on offensive production last year are Kansas City, Baltimore, Dallas, Philly, San Francisco. Four of them are in the playoffs. The only team that's not is Dallas. They're playing week 17 to get in. This is the number two third down offense in the NFL. And so if they can keep that up and continue, this is a playoff football team because of it.
Listen, I'm not saying that anyone should vote for Derek Carr for MVP, but
if you did, who would you be, though?
You might be
his brother. Maybe a family member.
All right. But you have seen him be at the helm of this Raiders resurgence. He's thrown 16 touchdowns to just two interceptions, a ratio that ranks third in the league behind only Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. We now welcome in Ravens running back Mark Ingram, who joins us on behalf of the Tide Clean jersey swap. And let's start with some nuts and bolts, get some of this out of the way. Mark, I don't know who you're shushing there, but either way, you've been out since week six. How's that ankle feeling for you?
Getting better. It's getting a lot better, so just takes a little time, you know, a little tricky, but I'm getting a lot better. Working hard to be able to get back out there with my guys, man. Can't wait.
Well, you built the old school way, so we expect you back soon. Man, my question is, so you run up 260-something plus against Pittsburgh, and then this past Sunday, you come out in the second half, the Ravens, and they put up the run game and start bullying people. How bad is it sitting on the sideline when you start to see that offensive line move like that? And how bad does it make you want to get back out there, bro?
Well, I'm telling you, when they was playing Pittsburgh last week, I wanted to get out there on get the gimping out there. You know what I mean? They was moving the ball. They was moving the line of scrimmage. They was creating some runs, man. The backs was hitting it, making people miss and making stuff happen. So, you know, it's definitely tough being able to sit on the sideline when, you know, you guys are getting active like that. But, I'm just happy that we getting the run game going, man. It's a staple of what we do. It's the identity of our team. And if we could run the ball and be physical up front, you know, we're tough on teams.
Mark, I got to know, man, we've been heavy football, but I got to know the backstory to Big Trust, man. Where did it come from? What does it mean? So when I hear you say it, I can connect with it deeper, bro.
Basically, I think it hails from Broward County, down there with LJ and Hollywood Brown, you know what I mean? So and when I first came to the Ravens, like, you know, I'd just be rapping with Lamar, he'd be like, trust, trust. Like, I'd be like, man, like, I'm like, man, you that dude. I've been following you since, you know, Louisville. Like, you a baller. He'd be like, trust, trust. I'm like, yeah, we about to kill stuff this year. He'd be like, trust, trust. So eventually I'll just be like, big, you know, like everything we do it big. So I put the big trust on there. He'd be like, trust. I'd be like, yeah, big trust. You know what I mean? And so I started saying that to him, like, you know, started saying it around the locker room. And then they wanted me to introduce him after one of the games. And Judon was over in the cut, like, big trust. I was like, yeah, big trust. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
Mark Jackson.
Now I would just like to introduce y'all to the man, the myth, the legend, the MVP front runner. If anybody else got to say something different about that, then come see me. Yeah. I'm right here in Beemore outside the bank. If you got an issue with that, come see me. I'm about that. Big trust. Woo woo. Lamar Jackson in the flesh. Yes, sir.
Big trust.
And then after that, it just took off. But it started with Lamar, started with Hollywood. Lamar was always telling me trust, always saying trust. And I just said big trust. And
that's love, man.
Blew up from there.
Let's play a little game here. We're gonna do finish the sentence. So I'll say the sentence, and then you finish it for me after I go. All right, you ready?
Yes.
Okay, Lamar Jackson is?
Baby goat. Baby goat, still growing. Baby goat.
I love it. The MVP is?
Lamar Jackson.
The AFC North is?
Toughest division in football.
The okay. Ravens will finish this season as?
Super Bowl champions.
Got it.
Big trust.
Big trust.
Woo woo.
Mark, appreciate you, brother.
So much fun. Thank you so much. Oh, still to come on NFL Live. Dallas has had quite the list of dilemmas this season. Their latest question mark, what should they do about the draft? Our answers may surprise you.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Let's get to the Cowboys, who, of course, without Dak Prescott and hold a 2-7 record. So that ugly record has them in prime position when it comes to the 2021 NFL draft. This is a positive for the Cowboys. Our Football Power Index projects the Cowboys to secure the third overall pick, just behind the Jets and Jaguars. Here's what owner and GM Jerry Jones said earlier today about the Cowboys' current state of affairs.
You know, right now, it looks like we're in line for the third pick. Now, it could move up, could move down, but if it stays at 3, is it crazy to bring up the idea of taking a quarterback with the third pick or the second pick, if you may have it?
Yes. You asked me if it's crazy to bring the idea up, and I'm answering you, yes. You know, Dak is our quarterback.
All right, listen, but it is a business, guys. So, Marcus, if the Cowboys are in a spot to draft Dak's replacement, should they?
Yeah, I mean, what? Look, Jerry and Steven are living in a PC culture, right? They want to be politically correct. We saw how Dak exited the field with an ankle fracture, and everything is about saying the right things. But he does have an ankle fracture, and you don't know if he's going to return to be in the form. This is a business of football. Here's the caveat. If it's Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, you do it. If not, you move on. You draft Penei Sewell from Oregon, and you get ready to reinvigorate your offensive line, who you've lost to some injury, and create some depth there. So, yeah, that is going to happen. If Trevor Lawrence or Justin Field is on the board when Dallas picks, they will take one of those two quarterbacks.
So, Dan, what should the plan be the rest of the way in Dallas?
I mean, the plan should be to pray that you get one of those two picks. I mean, the players are going to try to win games, but if you're the Jones fam, you're like, I want that first or second pick. All right, so this is why. We've all sat here for weeks now, and Mina's kind of brought it to everyone's attention how poor this roster is. She's pointed out that Jerry put this roster together, and it is a really bad roster. Guess what? If Dak Prescott comes back next year, it's not getting fixed. It's not a one-man fix. Two, Shefty's mentioned multiple times how difficult it's going to be to get the franchise tag under the salary cap and have, like, even – the roster that's somewhat close to this football team. You're probably going to have a lesser roster next year if you have to have Dak Prescott under the franchise tag. So if you get that first and second pick, or first or second pick, you're ecstatic if you're Dallas, because one, it gives you leverage against that contract negotiation that we know Jerry wants to win against Dak Prescott. Two, it gives you the opportunity to reset the clock. Like, if you want to move on from Dak Prescott and the finances of it, you can reset the clock and take a young quarterback. Three, let's say, you know what, Jerry Jones and the Jones family goes, actually, their words are actually action, and they do re-sign Dak Prescott. Now you got a trade chip that somebody is going to come up and go get that quarterback that they want, and that roster rebuild that's needed because it's not a very good football team, you can get that done much quicker. So their hope should be to get, at worst, the second pick of the draft next year.
And despite the fact that they have struggled to get a contract extension done, Dan, it's gone on for a couple of years now. I think the fact of the matter is Dallas does want Dak with that franchise moving forward. And Dak wants to be in Dallas long-term moving forward. And I still think that they'll find a way to figure out a solution to that contract. Now, if they can do that, and if Dallas gets one of those top picks, a first, second overall pick, a third overall pick even, where you're looking at Trey Lance maybe, maybe that pick does have the value that you can auction off. And look, we're talking about how depleted that roster is. The quickest way to rebuild it, especially when you're paying a quarterback like they'd like to do with Dak, is to acquire cheap rookie contracts. Mm-hmm. Cheap rookie contracts of talented players. So you auction off that pick, get more picks, and begin to replenish a roster that right now looks like it needs to be replenished.
I think there is a very big difference between the second and third pick this season because of Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And the truth about tanking or gunning for one of those picks is players and coaches don't take. GMs and organizations tank. And that ship has sailed, right? Like, the Cowboys could have traded away some of their star players, try to, you know, focus on next year, but they didn't. Now, Dan, you're correct that the roster is not great. I certainly have criticized them. But this is an offense that was putting up major points before Dak Prescott went out. So even if they have a third pick, they trade down, maybe accumulate more picks, the offense isn't in terrible shape. It's the defense that needs to be rebuilt. And I think that even if they were to re-sign Dak, and you're right, if they tagged him, it would be difficult. They'd probably want to sign him to a long-term deal that they could then restructure. They can use those picks and some of that ammunition to focus on fixing the defense because this is a playoff caliber offense with Dak Prescott.
Here's my thing. Has the offensive line window closed? I understand that, like, it's the defensive issue, but has the offensive line window closed?
Right.
Like, getting the fifth pick this year does nothing for Dallas. If you really want to do something for Dak Prescott, keeping it real, if you really want to sign Dak Prescott and build as good of a future with him as you can, you should try to get the second pick. And I agree with you, the players and coaches, they're not going to buy into that. But the best thing for the Cowboys organization is to get the second pick. And whatever means necessary to get there is the thing that they need to do as an organization separate of the players.
Yeah, when it comes to that number one pick, though, it's important to keep in mind that the Jets doing everything they can to win the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. According to FBI, they have a 63% chance of securing the number one pick. All right, kick off your Week 10 NFL Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern with the Countdown crew on ESPN and the app. They'll have all the early breaking stories, injury updates, of course, previewing each game right up until kickoff. New on NFL Live, by the way, from our Patriots reporter Mike Reese. Bill Belichick moments ago on a radio interview. The question was, when scouting on the road, how do you take your coffee? Well, Bill said, I don't drink coffee. I have a lot of other vices, but that's not one of them. I skip the coffee there, and I certainly need to skip the donuts too. He continued to say, I can't stand the smell of coffee. I don't like coffee ice cream. This guy hates coffee. I like every sweet that has ever been made, but I just don't have a taste for it. I've tried. It just doesn't work for me. Couldn't develop a taste for scotch either, unlike Aaron Rodgers. Now listen, Marcus, I've watched you make coffee before. It's more cream than it is coffee. Wow. So you and Bill Belichick might be in the same boat. I don't know. What do you think?
He needs to try the type of coffee I drink because it's not necessarily coffee. I have coffee with my creamer as opposed to the other way around. I got you, Bill. Like, I will turn you into a coffee drinker, technically.
Yeah.
But really, what you're drinking is a sweet, creamy, whatever you want to call it, instead of coffee. I got you, big dog. Yeah. Just holler at me, man. Holler at us on NFL Live. We got you.
When Marcus makes coffee, it's like the creamer is maybe up to here, and he uses all of the creamer, and then there's a little tiny dab of coffee in there. It keeps him going, though. He's not hurting for energy.
Twice so sweet.
I don't like
ahead
coffee.
Ahead on NFL Live, after a rough start to the season, we've seen a major improvement from Cam Newton. What's behind that, Cam? Tell us.
I'm getting tired of sucking. Simple.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Dan, we've been talking a lot about Cam Newton. Cam Newton's been talking to himself about needing to be better. What did you make of his performance last night?
Yeah, first of all, it's the second straight week that Cam's played good football. But more importantly for me, it's been, I don't know if there's a player in the NFL this season that I have gained a greater level of respect and appreciation for than Cam Newton. Like, listen, he's had probably incredible ups and downs this year. But the transparency that he's talked with, the accountability that he's had, the honesty that he's kind of spoken about through this journey, not only from this season, but really heading into this season and signing with New England. I know this. The conversation or the question has been like, has Cam Newton helped himself this year? Unequivocally, 100% yes. If I'm a football team or I'm running a football team, I want guys in my building like Cam Newton, especially veterans that have had the highs of highs, climbed a mountain. The accountability and the honesty that he has had and he's talked about can only be good for your locker room. Cam Newton, I have tons of respect for you, the way you've handled this season.
Yeah, I have a tremendous amount of respect for what he's done too, but he has not helped himself as far as being a starter in this league. Like, I want to be honest. Y'all know I've been on the Cam damn Newton train and I'm still on it. And I hope he finds a job, but these final games of this season, this back half of this season, is the most important weeks in Cam Newton's career. Not just this season or finding another team, in his career. Because Cam Newton wants people to look at him as a starter, not some guy to come in as a second string or a backup or be a stopgap between making the decision in the draft or not, or even in free agency. So I don't hold Cam Newton's expectations to the point of just being on a team or on a roster. We know he's good enough to be on a team in the NFL. We know he's good enough to be a formidable backup, and you could argue that you may have the best one in the league. But the way Cam Newton wants to play football, the way he wants to be a starter, lead a franchise, and put them in position to win games, he's going to have to perform great the rest of the way during this season. I'm a firm believer in that. And let's not forget, it wasn't a lot of people clamoring to sign Cam Newton either. So he understands the position that he's in. And this Jets game and the prior week against the Bills goes a long way in trying to make that determining factor for a team out there, if it not be the Patriots.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You guys keep talking about Cam Newton. Meanwhile, the Patriots defense is watching this like, because they don't want anyone talking about what they did last night. Frankly, what they've done all season. We've been so obsessed with Cam and his offense and their ups and downs. His defense is not what they were. This huge part of the reason why the team has struggled. They went from being statistically the best defense in the NFL last year to a bottom 10 unit by many metrics. Last week, the Bills ran all over them. This week, Joe Flacco threw on them like it was 2014. I mean, he was averaging over 10 yards per attempt, had a passer rating of 128. I saw coverage breakdowns. I saw poor J.C. Jackson, who's normally very good, get absolutely toasted a couple of times. The Patriots, we were promised this year, or I guess the best possible iteration of the Patriots, were going to play ball control offense and good disciplined defense. Only one of those things happened last night, and it was not on defense.
Yeah, you know, back to Marcus's point, too, about Cam playing for his career right now. Up next, they've got the Ravens. They've also still got the Cardinals left on their schedule, the Chargers, the Rams, the Dolphins, who knows, the Bills again, and then those Jets again. So interesting to watch how Cam handles the rest of this year. A group of more than 80 reporters and writers and an analyst, if I can say that word, assembled their Week 10 power rankings on ESPN.com. At the top of the list, of course, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're 8-0. Then rounding out the top five, we've got the Chiefs, Ravens, Packers, and Saints. But let's take a closer look at the NFC specifically, as our football power index can't figure out what to do with the top four teams in the conference. You saw that. Packers, Saints, Seahawks, and Bucks favorites to win the Super Bowl. So, all right. Our team here going to take a look at each of those four teams to identify a potential fatal flaw with a Super Bowl contender for Super Bowl 55. Mina, the Packers don't make the Super Bowl. What will the reason be?
Yeah, run defense is going to be the issue with this team, which often isn't a problem, but it certainly was against Minnesota. You're seeing what Dalvin Cook did to them there, and it was in the NFC or the playoffs last year as well. When you watch the Packers defense, you just see missed tackles all over the place. As you can see from this statistic, major yards after contact, something they have to tighten up in the middle of the field if they want to stop offenses from stringing together long drives.
So, Marcus, if the Saints come up short, where can they point the finger as we continue our fatal flaws?
Yeah, it's hard to even go here after we saw the performance against Tampa Bay. But it'll be on the back end. And I remember Mina talking about the secondary supposedly being a strength, and they were really good against Tampa Bay. But they are giving up some big plays, and it's a lot due to miscommunication, not just guys getting flat out beat, even though that happens sometimes. So I think if we look at the New Orleans Saints at some point and they're not in the playoffs or don't have a chance to go to the Super Bowl, it'll be because they gave up too much yardage through the air. That's the only issue that I've seen with this team so far that could cost them as far as trying to win the Super Bowl.
We're talking top teams in the NFC. Dan, the Bucs' biggest flaw heading into the second half of the season?
Their offensive game plan, their offensive coaching and play calling with Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich. First of all, give me more motion. It's 2020. Your offense should motion more. Number two, Mike Evans' usage. It doesn't always have to be a deep ball. Use him a little bit, Mike, how the Saints do Michael Thomas. Give him some shorter routes to work the middle of the field. Number three, stop asking Rob Gronkowski to slow down and chop his feet and be a refined route runner. Just get him going. And fourth of all, there should be two things that you major in offensively. Hardball play action pass and empty packages. Give more control at the line of scrimmage to Tom Brady. So the coaches offensively for Tampa need to not hold this team back.
And then there's Seattle, who has a major flaw of their own. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, the Seahawks have allowed the most passing yards in a team's first nine games of a season in NFL history. But how about this? The Seahawks have only played eight games. So this isn't exactly the Legion of Boom that we've seen in years past. Mina, I heard you making sound effects as you saw those numbers, and I don't blame you. They're pretty scary if you're a Seahawks fan. So are they as bad as they look?
Yeah, it's not pretty, Laura. You know, coming off the Bills game, there were some interesting takeaways for me because they actually got a fair amount of pressure. Sacked Josh Allen seven times. But the coverage was a disaster for a number of reasons. Some of it was injuries. Their best cornerback, Phil Griffin, was out. And Quentin Dunbar, who played, was clearly banged up. The execution wasn't there either. But a fair amount of it, in my opinion, was also on the coaching. In this game against the Bills, Seattle played man coverage 65% of the time. Ton of single high, cover zero. Why? The Bills shred man coverage. Their wide receivers are better than your DBs. Stephon Diggs was a nightmare in this game. He was wide open. I don't understand why they didn't make adjustments considering the injuries, the talent delta, as I mentioned, and the fact that the Bills are so good at crushing man. It's perplexing to me. Pete Carroll himself took responsibility, by the way, for calling that blitz on 3rd and 16. Another strange coaching decision. Look, you can't make adjustments to talent at this point in the season aside from getting players back, but you can make adjustments on the coaching side. And that's what we need to see from Seattle going forward because they need to play at a higher level if they want to contend.
Not just the defense, though. I mean, you know, what's starting to show itself is this offense, and really the offensive line struggles to protect when teams decide to pressure them. And it showed up a bunch against Buffalo. And as good as they are with the normal dropback, they're not good handling pressure. Watch this backside linebacker blitz. This is a normal fire zone pressure, 3rd and 3. Now Russell Wilson stares right into that dropper, nowhere to go with the football. Okay, we get a chance to get off the football field. Now we're going to put all these bodies up at the line of scrimmage. We're going to fire that linebacker tailback. You got to go meet him with your face. one-on-one. Somebody's got to go watch this the pocket just get collapsed on Russell Wilson. Nothing there. Third down again. This is a bad third down offense. Five guys up in the line of scrimmage. Who's going to win their one-on-one? Greg Olsen, wide open. But Russell's a little frustrated right there because of the lack of protection that showed up in that game. Sack fumble. How about third and seven again? As good as they are, they're bad on third down offense. Five guys, one-on-one block. Somebody win. Six guy comes off that edge. Here comes zero blitz. There's no plan for that offense. And Russell's got to get a miracle launch downfield. This offensive line is not good when handling pressure. This offense, as great as it is not a good third down offense. It's not just the defense in Seattle.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you're that O-line, you think, well, we got Russell Wilson behind us and he can make so many things right. happen. Maybe spoils you a little bit or gives you false confidence. Marcus, this was your Super Bowl pick all the way back to the preseason. You still believe in the Seattle Seahawks to win the Super fire. Bowl.
Hell no, you can't win a Super Bowl covering like that. I want to go back to something Mina Kimes said as well. Like, she talked about the third and 16 with Pete Carroll and he blitzed. It's because he's terrified of that secondary back there. And he's trying to speed up. He knows what we know. He's watching the same stuff we watch in MK. And to Dan's point, with as far as picking up pressure and not being good on third down, I think this team, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong or y'all see it differently, I think this team misses Carson more than anybody is really paying attention to. Because when you talk about Seattle, the one thing we were talking about was how good Russell Wilson was in throwing the ball downfield. Carson is a physical running back, and they were able to churn yards with him in the backfield. I think they miss him a tremendous amount. Now, on to my question, because I like listening to my colleagues. I had to address those 2 points. L Boogie, this is not going to win you a Super Bowl. Nobody's afraid of throwing the ball on the Seattle Seahawks. They're trying to generate that pressure because they know that the secondary is the weak link, and sometimes you can overcome that. Like, okay. But this team cannot. We talk about Russell Wilson. We talk about how great they are. Do we realize, does everybody realize in America that both of those games that they've lost, that offense scored 30 points?
Go, Mina.
I just want to say something. We're coming off this little bit of recency bias. Every single one of these NFC teams has dropped a stinker. Every single one of them at times has. No, I know I sound like a homer, but y'all know I'm right.
Now you're right.
Right?
PU.
We saw the Packers get rolled.
You're
We've
right.
seen the Saints struggle. We saw the Bucks just get rolled. None of these teams are complete. So any of them can make it to the Super Bowl, in my opinion.
No dropping stinkers 100%. Here on NFL Live. Let's finish strong here. Time for one more thing before we go. Marcus, what do you got?
My man, Nikic, he ran a Ironman marathon, and I got some notes here. First, I want to tell everybody that he has Down syndrome. And I got some notes here that was absolutely amazing because I tweeted this earlier today. He ran, he did a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, and a marathon of 26.22 miles. Listen, y'all, this is phenomenal. These are the stories that we should be pushing and showing people. Shout out to you, Chris Nikic, for doing it. I saw it on Twitter, and I wanted to give you a shout out, man. Congratulations. We salute you, brother.